Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the January 26, 2020 session, focusing on Matthew chapter 4, verses 12 through 23. Leave it. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Crystal Shepherd.
I'm Daniel Glaze.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Well, our parent company, the company that hosts Faith Element, is Faith Lab. And we don't always talk about Faith Lab, but since it's early in the year, often churches are thinking about how they're going to share their work and communicate their story to their community. And these communication tools that are available now are really very powerful. You need to be intentional about how to use them. You need to look professional. And that's what Faith Lab does, is it helps organizations, congregations, through tools like websites, mobile apps, video, photography, graphic design, logo, and branding, all these areas. Faith Lab can help your congregation to tell its story in a way that is genuine and connects with the community so that they know who you are when they drive by and have some idea about the kinds of things that are happening at your congregation. So if you're looking for ways to communicate and to do a better job this year, I hope you'll contact Faith Lab and talk to the good folks there about the ways that they can help your congregation this year. It's good to see each of you back, Daniel, Crystal, Bert, and we've got a good New Testament text here out of Matthew. Bert, could you help us get into it?
I'll certainly try. Our text today is from Matthew's Gospel, which echoes the Gospel lesson from John last week that we talked about on the podcast. But I want to just do a little background. A few verses, this is early on in Matthew's telling of the Gospel story, and just a few verses before we pick up in today's text, Jesus is walking down to the Jordan River and he's baptized by John. And then Jesus enters the desert for 40 days, and he's tempted by the devil. And here we are in verse 12 of chapter 4. Jesus leaves Nazareth, where his dad and his mom had settled after returning with their son from Egypt after Herod died. Jesus is now 30 years old. He's a skilled carpenter. He's been working hard in Nazareth, we assume, caring for his mother, probably for his younger siblings. Jesus seems, for all we know, to have been a responsible, hard-working, upstanding man who made his mother proud. And then one day he comes home and he drops the keys to his woodworking business on the kitchen table. He empties his savings account. He leaves it on the kitchen table next to those keys so that they can provide for the family in the days ahead. And he tells his mother and his brothers that he's leaving. He can't do this anymore. He's got something else he has to do, something gnawing at him inside that won't let him alone, and he's got to follow this calling. Oh, sure, he'll write or call sometime when he gets to wherever it is he's going, and he walks out the door, and he never returns home. There's another passage that says, "The foxes have dens and the birds have nests, but from this point onward the Son of God will have no place to lay his head." Jesus breaks with his family. Jesus breaks with his town, his career, his responsibilities, his reputation. He closes the door on his past, leaves it all behind, and he moves north to a crowded region called Galilee and into a town called Capernaum. Now, depending upon whom you ask, Galilee is known for either being progressive and radical or for being out there and wacky, kind of like California. See, the people in Galilee have a reputation for being open to new ideas, new ways of thinking and living, and for always looking for something new to come along and try. The people of Galilee are also known for being a hotbed of anti-authoritarian and anti-establishment movements. Again, imagine if your son or daughter walked away from a promising career and just said, "They're hitchhiking to San Francisco, I'll call you later." I think that's probably how Mary felt. I mean, let's not romanticize the Holy Family here. Sure, Mary had some unexplainable events in her life 30 years before this with dreams and visits from animals, dreams and visits from angels, and a mysterious pregnancy that she learns is from God. But come on, 30 years of a somewhat normal Jewish family life have now passed, and her son is a grown, wonderful young man. So why is he throwing all this away and just wandering up to Galilee like some free spirit hippie? Now, when we jump ahead of the story, we'll find out that Mary and her other children do show up and try to grab Jesus and take him home. And scripture tells us they think he's gone completely bonkers. But you see, this is exactly what Jesus does. He walks away. He makes a clean break with his past. There's no hanging on. There's no wishy-washiness. It's all or nothing. And as we read about this new chapter in his life, in Matthew's gospel, this beginning to fulfill his calling as God's son, it's where he chooses to go that's just as confusing as everything else. Jesus doesn't go to Jerusalem, to the temple, to the center of religious life in Judaism. He does not go to the very people who know God and what God wants. He does not go to the people who have the most knowledge and understanding and appreciation for the tradition of the scriptures and prayer and worship and religious life. Perhaps he has already found them to be tied too tightly to their own limited understandings, tied too tightly to their past, which made them unable to hear fresh and living truth of God that he is being called to preach and live out. So instead he goes to Galilee, he goes to Capernaum, and he lives among some very questionable people. But in Galilee, people are always eager to hear something new, and they're willing to leave behind old things and try new things. The late and legendary biblical scholar William Barclay says that Galilee is the only place in all of Palestine where a new teacher with a new message had any chance of being heard. And sure enough, that's where Jesus comes across Peter and Andrew and James and John, and he invites them, "Come, follow me." And he invites them to leave their fathers and their mothers and their livelihoods. He does this among people who are willing to try new things. At the beginning of this new year, 2020, as we are listening to Matthew's gospel, as we're losing ourselves in this story, this good news story that Matthew is telling, as we seek to let Matthew's story break into our lives and become our story of Jesus among us, inviting us, I wonder if you'll find in us an openness and willingness to change, an openness and willingness to abandon old things and try new things, an openness and willingness even to leave behind our past, our structures, our mothers and fathers and our teachings and the institutions which gave birth to our faith, to leave behind the securities and certainties and comforts of our 20th century churches. I wonder if you'll find among us and in us an openness and willingness to leave it behind to wherever he leads us in this emerging 21st century world. Or just as he bypasses Jerusalem and moves to Galilee in Matthew's gospel, will Jesus bypass us and our institutional churches with our written in stone doctrines as he goes other places to people who have no attachments, no rootedness in our church traditions, to preach and find disciples who will leave everything and follow him? Last week, Daniel led us in an intro to John's gospel account of Jesus inviting us to come and see. And I wonder if today, in Matthew's text, even those of us who already claim Jesus as Lord, if Jesus might be inviting us to leave it all behind.
So, Bert, thanks for that introduction. And I have to tell you, there's something about this text that has just won't let me go and sort of confounds me. You know, there are other places in the Gospels where these folks want to follow Jesus, and he says, you know, but first let me let me go bury my father. And Jesus sort of says, you know what? You're not cut out for it. Go, you know, or the, in other words, in other places of the gospel where people want to follow Jesus, he talks them out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But here, I mean, these two words, follow me, and twice Matthew says, immediately they did it. Maybe there was something within James and John that they responded immediately. Maybe there was something about that, the simple call. Maybe they were just ready for a change. I don't know. But Matthew's clear that immediately they left what they're doing and said, I'll go. What? So the question that's been rattling around in me and won't let me go is, what was it about Jesus's invitation there that was so compelling, that was so earth-shattering for them, life-changing, that they said, that without thinking twice, said, yep, I'll go.
Daniel, you saying that made me think, because Bert was talking about if Jesus would pass by our churches now, and it makes me think, what would be compelling enough for us as the church right now to follow? Because there's so many things that vie for our attention. I wonder, because everything kind of there is flashing lights and, you know, instant gratification. Jesus calls us to a different rhythm, I think. I wonder for us as the modern church if that is compelling enough for us.
That's interesting. And I don't recall whether we talked about it on the podcast or not, but, you know, some research has come out that, you know, the last 30 years have not been kind to church attendance and our numbers, et cetera. And for all the church growth movements, and, you know, there's a lot of church hopping and church membership switching, but not really growth in that. So what I think part of what we've created among ourselves is this, this system of trying to have the latest, greatest, or the shiniest thing to dangle in front of folks to get them to leave their church, cross town, and come to ours. But what you're causing me to wonder, you know, is in trying to do that, it's almost like we're working in an entirely different way than Jesus is. Jesus issues a simple invitation. Mm-hmm. And we think we've got to have it in lights, on the glossy postcard, heaven help us, fog machines, you know, to really bring folks out, when the simple invitation, simple and compelling invitation of follow me and together we'll change the world, was so compelling that they did.
You know, these are great questions. We're so thought and proposition and idea oriented that, you know, that's often how we think of, if someone was going to offer a compelling reason why, you know, we should act one way or another or leave something behind or do anything. I mean, we think about the arguments we would make, the case we would present. If we're honest, I mean, if we think about it not from an idea perspective, but from a love perspective, an attraction perspective, even, if you will. I know when I met my wife, when we didn't know she was going to be my wife and I was going to be her husband, there, you know, she didn't make a case and I didn't make an argument for why, although there were several good reasons why the guy she was dating was really not right for her. But that's a whole nother conversation. But no, I mean, we met and I was immediately interested and I wanted to meet her again. I wanted to spend more time. I wonder if that's how we are, whether it's with friends or with those who we love. Is that the appeal of Jesus, that Jesus was presented to the disciples and they were like, not a head thing, but a heart thing, that this is somebody that's really interesting and I want to spend more time. I don't know. Am I just a hopeless romantic?
Well, yes, but you're exactly right. I know you weren't calling me out, but the way I phrased that question, you know, I'm looking for, well, what was it about his sales pitch that really allowed him to seal the deal when, like, you know.
And he had a business plan, clearly.
Right. You know, where sometimes those things like love and, you know, calling like this really defy reason and logic.
Exactly.
I think there's something mysterious about Jesus too in this passage where, you know, he's presenting, you know, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. I'm sure the disciples hadn't heard that before, and I think that's part of the attraction, I think, to Jesus, is that there's something mysterious about Jesus. It's not just right there in your face. There's questions. There's a depth there that maybe they didn't have elsewhere in their lives. And I think that can carry over for us today in the church and outside of the church, in that leaning into that mystery of not knowing everything, of the information not readily being available, for there being a period of waiting, of trying to get to know, kind of like when David was talking about, you know, the romantic attraction. You had this time of getting to know someone, of learning new things about someone. And I think we just, when we think of Jesus and in church, I think a lot of us, especially, I mean, I know being in ministry, I think a lot of times it's like we kind of know everything, so to speak, about, you know, Jesus, but there's more to know. There's more to the mystery of God than we can ever fathom. And so I think that's part of, at least for me, the attraction with God, is that I can't know it all. I'm not a know-it-all. I can't know everything. Mm. And so there's this mystery there. And I wonder if that's part of what attracted the disciples. I mean, if we're talking about Galilee being a place that there are all these new ideas that come out. And I mean, to say you're going to be fishers of men, that's so different. That's something that they maybe, that I don't think they would have heard. But it's also relating to something that they knew in their lives. So I think that would be compelling. And I like what Bert said about, you know, about his family thinking that he was, you know, gone off the rails. I mean, he's left everything behind, and I don't know if I said that. Sorry, Bert.
No. Crystal, I knew I had you when I said Jesus was a free-wheeling hippie.
That's right. Yeah. So for me, you know, that too, like he had these radical ideas that even his family were like, what are you talking about? What are you doing? And I think that that's part of the compelling thing too about Jesus, is he continually flipped it. He upended things to where with every question, there's another question. I think in modern times, we've lost a lot of that. We've lost a lot of the mystery, and we've lost a lot of that questioning. I think that's where the mystics and the hippies of this world get it right, to spend the time questioning and leaning into the mystery.
You know, there's a lot of weeping and gnashing of the teeth, and this has been going on for 20 years or so now within denominational structures, of church attendance getting less, and people aren't going to church, and the decline of the importance of faith and religion and Christianity. And my experience, because I'm not a pastor of a multi-staff big church that demands all my time. Most of my time is not in the church. It's on campus, in a college campus, right? Or writing and hanging out with people. My experience is that people are not walking away from God as much as they're walking away from our buildings. And so the weeping and gnashing of teeth is an institutional grieving. But I don't think it's true to say that people are losing. I find an incredibly vibrant, rich spirituality alive all around me. Even in, you know, one of the most vibrant, alive, spiritually alive people I know is Adam, an atheist. It's just fascinating, and because I think it's there. And people are willing to listen to relationships and willing to listen to love and the common good. And in so much as we mentioned last week, that God and Jesus and the church and evangelism has been taken to not mean those things anymore. That's what people are leaving. I'm going to plug a book that's neither Faith Element, Nurturing Faith, or mine, but it's from my friend Brian McLaurin, who doesn't know he's my friend yet. But I love, so Brian, if you're listening, we need to hang out. It's I'd say fairly recent. It's a couple of years old now, but it's called The Great Spiritual Migration. And he's been one of the leaders of this movement for the last 20 years. But this is called How the World's Largest Religion is Seeking a Better Way to Be Christian. And the whole book is about stuff we've been talking about tonight and last week and probably some recent podcasts about moving on and leaving behind systems and beliefs and learning to live a life of love and common good, and letting that be a faith structure for us, a better way to be Christian. Anyway, so I'm just going to plug that book because I think it echoes, our listeners would benefit and enjoy it. Brian, you could send us some kickbacks, right? Get a kickback royalty thing? I don't know how that works. But Jesus was migrating away from the religious tradition and calling others who weren't all that rooted to it. Which I have to be careful to say, because an institutionalized form of the religious tradition, because what Jesus was going to and leading them to was a truer, richer, actual tradition, but that was still alive and moving. Does that make sense?
I have to confess that as we've been talking, I'm asking the question that probably our listeners are also asking, which is, Jesus came walking along and said, come and follow me. What is the likelihood that I would take that seriously, much less act on it? And we don't know, right? But I was thinking about something that Thomas Merton, that great spiritual advisor and guide, wrote, which I think has something to do with what we've been talking about how we find our purpose and what it is we find that draws us toward God and toward following Christ in this way of life. This is what he wrote in a piece called Love and Living. He said, love is our true destiny. We do not find the meaning of life by ourselves alone. We find it with another. We do not discover the secret of our lives merely by study and calculation and our own isolated meditations. The meaning of our life is a secret that has to be revealed to us in love by the one we love. And if this love is unreal, the secret will not be found. The meaning will never reveal itself. The message will never be decoded. At best, we will receive a scrambled and partial message, one that will deceive and confuse us. We will never be fully real until we let ourselves fall in love, either with another human or with God. May we fall in love again with this Christ who comes to us and asks us to follow. Thank you for this good conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.